Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another hour of Tribal Wisdom by Bridal Tribe. I am your host, Cynthia Williamson. Happy Wedding Wednesday to you all. I always love acknowledging our Facebook and Twitter fans and telling them Happy Wedding Wednesday and thanking them for all the support that you guys always give us. I hope everybody's doing okay in this weather. This weather this week is way better, much better than it was last week. I am not melting, and I'm hoping that you guys are enjoying the weather too. Tonight's show is going to be quite interesting. I have the pleasure of having Mrs. Audrey Jackson of the Lethe Florence Foundation as my co-host. And I also have Jeffrey V. Noble of the Noble Touch on, and I hope that you guys are ready for a powerhouse show, and you'll have your questions and comments. If you want to call in, the number is 347-996-3160. Press the number 1 if you would like to make a comment or if you have a question. But for now, let us welcome my co-host, Miss Audrey Jackson. Audrey, you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm good.
I'm well, thanks.
Wow, you have an event coming up because this is how this whole thing came together. You have a wonderful event coming up called Sela, I believe. Is this correct?
Sela, yes.
Please first tell us a little bit about the Lethe Florence Foundation and the event that you have coming up that will include our special guest for tonight.
Well, the foundation was founded in honor of my grandmother. August 28th will be the second anniversary of her passing. And just to celebrate her life and spirit, I have decided to create this foundation to work with women and families, because that was my grandmother's passion. So this first conference is somewhat of a memorial, but it also gives the kickoff to our foundation fundraising to help women in business and provide support for families in the New York area.
Wonderful. And now, this particular conference is called the Sellout Conference, From Mother to Daughter, or From Daughter to Mother and Beyond, Helping Families Heal.
Right.
What this is the theme of the conference, and of course, as I said, we have one of our special speakers from the evening, Jeffrey Vincent Noble. What is this conference going to be about? You have different speakers coming, but what is the conference about, Helping Families Heal, about?
Well, we're really kind of we're focusing on the role that women play in the family. So we're looking at the generation of people who find themselves now taking care of their parents. You know, they have to bring their parents into their home, or they're working between two households, their household and their parents' household. We're looking at the story of mothers, you know, the various struggles that we have in raising our children. And we're looking at women who are in ministry or in business and are balancing marriage, you know, motherhood, and that other thing that we do for ourselves. Looking at trying to have healthy families emotionally and nutritionally. So all,
nice.
You know, the whole family, the whole picture.
Great, great. I want our listeners to know that this event is happening Saturday, August 24th, 2013, at the Cornerstone Baptist Church in Brooklyn. I welcome you to please go on over and like the Lethe Florence Foundation page, where you'll be able to get more information about the event, as well as take a look at the blog, where you can get some wonderful information to help in this. But I don't want to really prolong any further. I would love for our guest, Jeffrey Vincent Noble, to come on and introduce himself. Jeffrey, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Tribal Wisdom by Bridal Tribe. We're so happy to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Ms. Williams, and hello, Ms. Audrey Booth Jackson.
Hi there, guy. How are you?
I'm the magic
that is Jeff Noble.
What do you mean, that is Jeff Noble laughing?
No. She said the magic that is Jeff Noble.
Oh, the magic that is Jeff Noble. I'm looking forward to having fun, that's all.
Yay. Yay. Fun is what we're all about here, absolutely, which you will absolutely see. Please, we had a talk, and it was wonderful finding out about who you are and what it is that you do. If you could take a moment and tell our listeners what it is that you do, let's start with that.
Well, I want to make what I do very simple. I would say that I help people transform their lives, or show people how to transform their lives and guide them through that process. That's mm-hmm. basically what I do in a nutshell. I've been called the human potential engineer because everyone has the potential to do and accomplish almost anything they want. Unfortunately, some of our past baggage gets in the way. The reality that we create is a reality that we observe through past experiences, not through the possibilities, but through probabilities based on our past experiences. So when we release the past, we can embrace the future. And one of the things I do through two different methods is through I'm an energy medicine practitioner, mm-hmm. so I do it energetically. And I also use neuro-linguistic programming to help people transform their lives, whether it's physical pain, whether it's emotional pain, whether they don't know where the pain is coming from, it's experiencing something, or they know there's something that's blocking them in their life or keeping them stuck. Mm-hmm. And like in a quicksand, they know they can move forward, but then they just can't seem to get there for whatever reason. Or they continue to hit success to some extent, and then they sabotage themselves and slide back again. So regardless of what the situation is, what a human potential engineer does, the same thing that a regular engineer does, but a regular engineer will walk into a room and see, a design engineer will walk into a room and see no furniture in there and come with all kind of design to help that room look complete and full and beautiful. An electrical engineer will walk into a building and see where there needs to be more electrical outlets or more electricity ran in that area or either higher voltage outlets put in those areas. Well, a human potential engineer does the same thing. We look at the potential of the human being and help engineers to help them get from point A to point B.
Nice.
That's a nutshell.
So, yeah, now that nutshell I like. I like that you walk in and you help them design a life that they want by really helping them, you know, do away with the hurtful past and looking toward their future.
Well, the hurtful people living out of their hurtful past. The reality they create right now is based on their hurtful past, not based on who they could be. Mm-hmm. It's based on all the past conditioning from mom, pop, aunt, uncle, preacher, sister, mm-hmm. brother, whoever else had any influence in your life, and you've taken on their beliefs. None of us are who we could be. We are all a composite of all those people who had influence over us in our lives.
Yes. Well, I also like that you called yourself a holistic mental health practitioner.
Yes, I say that because what I do is different than, I'm not a doctor, so I can't dispense any type of toxic pills for someone to take, number one. But number mm-hmm. two, the way that I look at health and healing mentally is different than a traditional therapeutic approach. And I'll give you an example. In a therapeutic approach, what you would hear is when you go into a psychologist, most of them anyway, I've worked with a number of them, so I know this is the way it normally works. And you walk in and say, I'm depressed. What's the first thing they say?
Why are you depressed?
Why are you depressed? or what are you depressed about?
Okay.
Now, my approach is taking a holistic approach to it, is how do you know when to get depressed?
Mm-hmm.
Because there has to be something that triggers you into that depression. If you mm-hmm. ask somebody, what are you depressed about? Then what they're going to do is give you the same story they've been giving everybody else the rest of their life. They're going to tell you the same story they've been telling people. That whole victim mentality,
mm-hmm.
that's what they're going to give you. When I start asking you how you know when you get depressed, then it's going to trigger something. Now you got to figure out, how do you know when to do this thing? If you're not depressed all day, every day, then how do you know when to trigger it? Some people say to me, some medical professionals have said to me, well, Jeff, it's chemical. Okay, well, then how does the chemical know when to kick in?
Mm-hmm,
there's something
mm-hmm.
that's triggering something to kick in. Even if it is chemical, what's causing the chemistry to kick in all of a sudden? There has to be something. So when I look at it from a holistic point of view, I look at what is causing it. Not what's causing it, but how does it know when to trigger, first of all, and then how do you do it? How do you do this thing called depression? I'll give you an example. It really confuses people when they sit in front of me, they're too many depressed. And I say, how do you know when to get depressed? I don't know, I just get depressed. And then I keep pressing them until they give me an answer. And I say, well, how do you know how to do it? They say, what do you mean, how do I know how to do it? I don't know how to, it just happens. I said, I'll tell you what. Let me be depressed with you for about 2 weeks so you can be free of depression for 2 weeks. How would I do it? What type of images do I have to make inside my head? And what type of things do I have to say to myself that cause me to have this experience, emotional experience, that we are labeling depression? So then what they started to do is they started to break down and go inside their mind and see how they're creating this inside their mind in most cases. And then from there, I can work to help them disengage the triggers and everything else. Now, if you look at it from the energy medicine point of view, we have different centers of energy in our body that get stuck when people are depressed, but it means that the energy is not flowing through their body evenly and smoothly, that there's blockages in certain parts of their body, and that's what's causing depression. And there's certain areas of the body that these blockages are more pronounced than other areas of the body. One is in the forehead area, what they call the third eye. You see that area, and you look at the energetic body, it's where willpower is. You look at the base, the basic spine area, a little lower than the base of the spine, is where the survival instinct is. Anyone that's depressed that I've worked with over the last, since 1994, always had an underactivated, what they call energy center underneath the spine, the solar plexus area, and the forehead area, or the third eye area. Those areas have always been, they call it depleted, meaning it's not enough energy flowing through them. I don't want to get too technical, but, you know, there's two different ways. What I'm saying is that I have a lot of different ways to approach any challenge or energy blockages that someone has. And those are the two ways I do it. Through neuro-linguistic programming, which is going back to reprogram the mind, or I can break up the energy blockages.
All right, well, let's touch on neuro-linguistic programming for a minute. You've already kind of given us an idea about removing energy blockages, but let's touch on neuro-linguistic programming and then get into how you use these things to truly start reconditioning the life of an individual.
Okay. So neuro-linguistic programming, the simple definition of NLP is, let's refer to as NLP. It's the way the pictures you make inside your head, the things you say to yourself, affects your nervous system and causes you to act or react a certain way. And I'll give you a very small example of what I mean. What I want you and your audience to say is, I want to go to work, but I'm tired. You just notice what happens. Say it three times. I want to go to work, but I'm tired. I want to go to work, but I'm
don't
tired.
Make me say that. Please don't make me say it because I am tired.
Don't worry about it. We get you out of it.
Okay, okay.
I want to go to work, but I'm tired. And notice what kind of pictures come in your head when you say that. Because every time you utter a sentence, there's an image coming in your mind also to match that sentence or to represent that sentence, to represent the words. So I want to go to work, but I'm tired. Just notice how your body feels. And now say, I'm tired, but I want to go to work. I'm tired, but I want to go to work. I'm tired, but I want to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And notice the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Is your energy level different?
Of course. Of course.
It's the
and the pictures that come to mind, right, it's different. I'm tired, but I'm enthusiastic about going. For me, for whatever reason, if I'm saying that sentence, I really do want to go. Even though I'm tired, I want to go for whatever reason.
And it's the same exact words, just different syntax. So we create our reality about how we feel in any given moment based on what we're saying to ourselves and the image that we make inside of our head.
I need for you to say that again. I need for you to say that sentence again. We create our reality.
We create our reality based on what we're saying inside of our head and the pictures that we're making inside of our head. The fact of the matter is, the quality of your life will depend upon the quality of your communication to yourself first and then to other people.
Jeff?
Yes.
Well, having worked with you before, when you had me, and I was doing the exercise along with you, you know, when I said it the first time, right, the colors were dark. When you had me switch the language, the darker color was still there, but it was on the bottom and lighter, and there was a lighter shade, a more brighter color on top.
And if you would have created that picture and made it brighter and brighter, you would have felt better and better.
Right.
Because we're making these images inside of our head. I always tell people when I do the seminars that, you know, we have these tablets now, we have the iPad and iPhone, laptop, and the air, what do you call it, the AirPlay, AirPort, whatever that thing is by Apple. It's Air something, I know that.
Right.
AirBook, right. Mm-hmm. So, and with all these things, what's interesting about this that we don't think about is with all these things, all these gadgets, all these new electronic toys, you get an owner's manual. But the most powerful computer in the world, the shoulder top, we've never been given an owner's manual how to run it.
And so, wow, would you say that you are starting to put together a certain type of owner's manual for each person so that they know how to run their own shoulder top computer?
Well, to tell you the truth, it's not much different. From person to person, there's not a whole lot of differences. Let's look at something like procrastination. So, if you think about something that you've been procrastinating on, 90% of the population, when they think about that thing that they procrastinate on, that they don't do it. By the way, procrastination is really funny to me because you are so productive doing procrastination, it's ridiculous. You're just productive doing things you shouldn't be doing, but you're productive.
Right.
But if you think about something you've been procrastinating on, 90% of the population, no matter where they are in the world, it's a still image. Think about what you need to do, but you have not done yet. Inside your mind, take a picture. If you look at it inside your mind, it's usually a still image. There's no movement in that image. For most people, if they start slowly adding movement to that image and start making that image brighter and brighter, they would feel more motivated to do whatever it was they were not doing. Try it for yourself. The audience can try it too. Just look at something you have not been doing. It'll more than likely be a still image for 90% of the population. Then you just add movement to that picture so it starts moving like a regular movie would move. It gets faster and faster and faster, and the voices get faster and faster and louder, and the colors get brighter and brighter. People start feeling more energy to do that thing that they haven't put off.
Right, right. Well, now, gosh, I was just about to ask you a question. Two things that I would definitely like you to touch on tonight, and I want to welcome our listeners to go and visit Jeff's page at thenobletouch.com to see testimonials and videos of what it is that he does and how he does it and the impact that he makes on people's lives. But for the CELA conference this coming August, you're going to be speaking on reconditioning for success, speaking joy, happiness, and success into your household. You mentioned the Twin Towers of Success, which I really enjoyed hearing about. Could you talk to us about that, the Twin Towers of Success?
Well, the Twin Towers of Success to me are the two ingredients that everyone needs to be successful and sustain it. You may be able to have it, but to sustain it, you need both. One is self-confidence, and one is self-esteem. Those are the twin towers of success. Now, it's funny because when we are first raised, from the time we come out the womb to about maybe 2 years old, we are encouraged, and we become more and more confident. We are born with confidence. We are born with everything we need to succeed because I've not yet seen any mother or father see their child trying to turn over when they're laying on their back, and they say, stop, don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself. They sit there with joy in their eyes as they watch their little baby try to turn over on their stomach. Then the baby starts trying to crawl, and they're encouraged. You start talking baby talk, which I don't understand what the adults are saying. The baby don't either. But, you know, we still talk to babies like they understand what we're saying with this baby talk stuff. And they're trying to, you know, they're trying to crawl, and they scoot, and if they fall on one elbow and scoot again. But sooner or later, they start to fall. The body makes the adjustments automatically. The mind makes the adjustments automatically. And the baby begins to see things from a different perspective, not only on their back now, they're on their stomach and able to move. And the parents are encouraging them. And then little Jeffrey decides he wants to stand up. So he'll pull up on something, put his hands and try to pull himself up and fall. The parents don't say, you failure, get out of here, we don't like you, we don't love you, you should go back where you came from. Parents don't do that. They encourage you, and they encourage you, and they encourage you until you finally can stand up. You're holding onto that chair. You're not walking yet, but at least you're standing up now. And everybody's applauding you, more baby talk and everything else. Oh, look at the baby, Jeffrey. And everybody's excited. And then they finally encourage you to take that first step. boom, fall flat. No one says, you're a waste of time. You can't even take one step. No one says that. They all encourage you to continue to develop more and more and more confidence in yourself. Then after a while, you're able to let go of that chair you were holding on to and walk. And once again, you see the world differently again now, because now you're moving around and you're staying up now.
Mm-hmm.
So all through life, we start to gather confidence because we do all these things and people are encouraging us, and they love us, they cheer for us, and they root us on. Then all of a sudden, you start getting your own little mind. And then you start hearing things like stop. You start hearing things like you can't do that, you shouldn't do that. And as you grow up older, you become older and older, you start developing your own identity. Then it gets worse when people tell you what you shouldn't do, what's good, what's bad for you. And it may have been bad for them during their lifetime even, or for them based on what they know. But it may not be bad for you. But then we begin to accept this stuff because we don't have a mind to discriminate. And then we start losing, some of us start losing some confidence. Now, if you're involved in sports, I encourage every parent to have their child involved in some discipline, whether it's basketball, whether it's dance, whether it's piano, whether it's gymnastics, whether it's fencing, whether it's shooting a bow and arrow, it doesn't matter. You want them involved in some discipline where they can gain confidence at a very early age. Because the more confidence they have at a young age, the more they build upon that confidence, the more they're going to inoculate themselves from all that stuff that goes on outside in the streets and what other people tell them. They won't even believe them. As a matter of fact, it may motivate them to do more just to show people that they don't know what they're talking about. So I encourage all parents to have their child involved in some discipline. For me, it was martial arts. So I play all the sports, but I love martial arts also. I swam, I played baseball. It was martial arts that probably changed my life the most. It's like, you know, because you get in the habit of winning and winning and winning and winning, you believe you can do anything. And that's, to me, especially in today's world where people of color always being knocked down, slapped, talked about. You see the images on TV that don't support who we really are, the kings and queens that we are. When you build this confidence in a child from a very young age, support them no matter what they do, and let them know, even if they fail, what other people consider failing, it's not really failure. There's no failure, it's only feedback. What that situation does, it gives you information that you need to make adjustments to come back and do it again. Because as long as you are alive, no matter what you have not accomplished, you still have an opportunity to accomplish it. So there is no failure, only feedback. And that's part of the confidence we have to give our children. Now, as you're building that confidence, because they're winning, they're getting victories in their life, their self-esteem is going to increase as long as you continue to encourage them and tell them they're beautiful, tell them they can do it. Just continue to support them and edify them. A lot of times our parents get mad at us or disappoint us because we let them down one time, and then their language begins to reflect that. Or they may be mad at the spouse. You know, maybe mad at the father or the mother, and it's just like your mother, you're just like your father. And just that tone alone tells the child that they're not good enough. We have to be very careful in how we communicate to our children to build a household that's truly empowered to go out there and turn the world upside down, regardless of what color, shape, size, how long a nappy their hair is, doesn't matter. If you have that kind of confidence, that kind of self-esteem, you will have all the breakthroughs you want in your life to live life on your terms.
Nice. To my listeners, if you're just tuning in, we are listening to Human Potential Engineer Jeffrey Noble about reconditioning your life for success. And I'm going to say that, of course, this is Tribal Wisdom, so we're normally talking about weddings, marriage, and family. So the tools that he's giving on this show tonight, of course, you can apply not just to yourself, but to your marriage, to your children, to your family, and so on. And we're so happy to have him on, along with my co-host, Ms. Audrey Jackson of the Leith D. Florence Foundation. Now, Audrey, the question to you is, you're having this phenomenal man at this event to speak to the participants. What is the objective of having him talk to your participants about being able to change their lives through NLP and removing energy blockages?
I think, you know, he said it very succinctly just now, because as our children get older, you know, as a high school teacher, I see where, you know, when I go to elementary school parent-teachers conference, you know, you can't get to see the teacher. There's so many parents there. You know, but you come to high school and you can pick, choose, and refuse which room you go to, because parents, after a certain point, are not participating in the lives of their young people. And that's when I think it's probably even more needed, because now you're preparing them to go out into the world, right? This is also the stage where they are wrecking your nerves, and you're wondering if you brought home the wrong child, and you're really kind of wondering who switched, because that is not the child I raised. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, Jeff can give us some triggers that, you know, when we're about to say that negative thing, that we can remember to, you know, plant that positive thing. Mm-hmm. You know, as Jeff was speaking, and I was, you know, I thought about some situations for myself, you know, what would happen if in the moment when your child is really wrecking your nerves and you just want to respond to what they're saying, if you just turn and say, you know what, I understand that you're upset with me right now, but I love you so much. You really do. I can't even begin to explain how wonderful I think you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really appreciate your being able to express your feelings right now. You know, just flip it a little bit. And I think that's what I'm looking for Jeff to be able to help us to do, as well as he has you know, some of the other skills that he gives us, is that when you are stuck and when you are in that place where, you know, okay, so you can't say, I think you're wonderful in this moment, you can then look at yourself and kind of figure out what that feels like, what that looks like, and move it so that you can be present for yourself and for your child. And that's what some of the NLP, you know, that's been my experience with the NLP.
Okay. Now, very briefly, Jeffrey and I touched on intentional healing ministry, which we will get into because I find that to be a very interesting topic. But it definitely not just seems like, but it is. It happens to be that you are affecting generations of individuals by starting with the adult generation so that they can now start changing the lives of future generations. And this question is to Jeff. The exercises that you spoke about, when you talked about the values exercise or the clarifying of definitions exercise, how does this help individuals to begin to change their life so that they can now make that change, move forward into future generations?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think that exercise, in my opinion, no one should get married before doing that exercise. That's the way I feel about it.
Ooh, say it again. Because I think, you know, it, like I said, tribal wisdom is really about couples coming on and discussing their journey of marriage and talking about what they've been through so that newlywed couples and people who are even thinking about getting married can understand, truly understand what marriage is about and the commitment that involves, and talk about getting to know your intended before you even take the step. So for you to say that is powerful. I don't know about to anybody else, but it's powerful to me that you should have a values exercise with your intended before moving forward into a committed relationship or marriage.
There are two exercises that I used to do when I did premarital counseling, marital counseling at St. Paul Community Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
One was getting to understand your mate. The second one was the value exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the value exercise is one in which you ask someone, if you're talking about relationships, like I would say if I was talking to Audrey and we were married, it would exercise or something like, oh, what's important to you in marriage? And she would tell me trust, she would tell me money, she may tell me sex, she may tell me communication, she may tell me partnership, she may mention a whole lot of different things. And then I would say the same thing, what it is to me. The problem is that some people will leave it at that. The challenge now is to be able to identify those things that Audrey mentioned. So if she mentions trust, I want to know, what does trust mean to her? Because my definition of trust and her definition of trust may be two totally different things.
Mm-hmm.
My definition of support, her definition of support may be two totally different things. Her definition of good sex and my definition of good sex may be two totally different things.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to clear all that out before we even go to find out which one is most important. Because there's some things that are non-negotiable in relationships sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like some women have told me that they're non-negotiables. I ask this question, what's your non-negotiable? If he puts his hands on me, that's it. Period, point blank, nothing to talk about. So some people, they're non-negotiables. You want to know all those things up front before you get married, so you know whether or not you want to go for this ceremony they call marriage. But to me, if you're not committed before the ceremony, don't even bother. You should be committed before the ceremony. The ceremony is for the public, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Right. But, of course, you know, Bridal Tribe is about the ceremony and about, you know, making everything beautiful. The Tribal Wisdom is really about, as you say, getting to know the person, getting to know all the things you need to know about marriage, whether it be finance, sex, being able to communicate, all kinds of different things before the marriage. And of course, sometimes after for some people, because they didn't get a chance to do that beforehand. So I have to say that I really am encouraged by you letting people know that they need to do this values exercise, that they need to have these conversations to clarify what does something mean to you, what does trust mean to you, you know, what does communication mean to you, what are the important things in you know, for you in a relationship, so that they can begin to really work together and find out whether or not they are compatible for marriage.
Not only that, they need to also figure out each other's communication style. Let me give you an example. There's something called, and these are all what they call unconscious filters. These are not things that people do consciously, but it gets us in trouble in a relationship because it's just who we are. In other words, one mate can have what they call an external frame of reference. And what that means is that they will listen to what everyone else says. They'll ask everybody their opinion or certain people their opinion. And their decision is going to be highly based on other people's opinion. Whereas another person may have an internal frame of reference. So they don't care what no one says. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. And that can cause problems in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Because what happens, if someone has an internal frame of reference, I can go and ask, well, she's my wife, what do you think about X, Y, and Z? And then she tells me, but that's what I want to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, or she's going to say, well, why do you bother asking me if you're going to do what you want to do anyway?
Right.
But not, I really want your opinion, but I have an external frame of reference. I mean, an internal frame of reference. So I'm going to do what I want to do. So if your opinion is different than mine, I'm still going to do what I want to do. Whereas if Audrey has an external frame of reference, meaning she listens to what other people say, and that has a major impact on the decision she makes, and I tell her, you know, X, Y, and Z, she may agree with me, just go ahead and do it. But then if something happens, she can say, well, you told me to do it.
Right.
You know, so they,
right.
And that's just one. There are all types of other little nuances that happens in communication that can cause someone with an internal frame of reference is very hard-headed. It's going to be hard to change their mind. With someone with an external frame of reference, it may be easier to change their mind. So, and there's just maybe about 15 of these little filters that could take people through so that before they got married, they knew what they were getting into as far as communication is concerned and what could happen down the line based on where they were right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, communication is the number one reason why people break up.
Wow.
We spend a lot of time in communication.
Uh-huh. Oh, right.
Well,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut Jeff off.
Okay.
Audrey, you were going to say something. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead.
I'm finished.
Okay. We're going to get back to you because we're going to talk about that intentional healing ministry that you and I discussed that I'm definitely want to discuss. But, Audrey, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, those same skills that we need to assess before we get married to make sure that we're communicating effectively and that we understand where the other person's value systems are, we also pass that on to our children. Mm-hmm. So if you've never discussed that in your courting period and you haven't worked that out before you become parents, that confusion is seeded into your children. Which then sets the dynamics for your household. Yes, sir?
There's something else you said, Audrey, I thought that I want to make a comment on. You said something, I know this one well also, and he said, what happens when your child has grown up now and they get on your last nerves?
Right.
And you're not in the space to say, I love you, honey, you know, blah, 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 blah. You're ready to knock the living, you know, out of them. See, the best thing you can do that puts you in a position of power and of resourcefulness is learn to deactivate the trigger that takes you there.
Mm.
The activating triggers. This is another good topic, but go ahead, because now I'm getting excited.
Because as long as they can activate that trigger, you're going to respond in a resourceful way. And they have the power. Because you're responding out of a conditioned response.
Mm-hmm.
So now you don't have, you're not as resourceful. Because now your breathing has changed, you're upset, you're angry. So you're not thinking creatively about how to communicate to them during that moment in time.
Right.
You think about knocking the hell out of them.
That is a good one. Because I know my mom used to, she wouldn't, like, she would just give us a look and say, I will remove your spleen. She wasn't one of those moms that say, I'll knock. She would say things that made our teachers wonder how.
Spleen.
Yeah, because, you know, and we would say,
I never heard that one before.
Oh, wow. I'm telling you, my elementary school teachers would always wonder how we knew so much about the human body. And it was because my mom was creative about what she'd never say, I'm going to beat you, I'm going to kick you or knock you across your head. She'd be like, I will remove your spleen. Just try me. And we didn't really know what the spleen was, but we knew it must have been important for her to be trying to tell us she was going to take it out. So it is interesting that you can get creative in either the way that you threaten the child or the way that you're going to speak to them at the moment that you're feeling tense or angry with them. And the discussion on deactivating triggers is a much needed topic, very much needed topic, because I don't think a lot of people even know their triggers. How does one even come to know what their trigger is? All they know is that just the things that make them angry.
Well, it starts off with inner awareness, just monitoring your moods and being aware of when you go off like them, start having these feelings, be aware of these feelings.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with awareness. Everything, if you want to really grow, one of the things you have to do is start becoming aware of where you are at any moment in time,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as your emotions are concerned, because, you know, it's like this. When you're having a good day, things that would normally bother you won't bother you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having a bad day, it becomes really irritant.
So true. So true. And what if, I mean, how do you apply that to the people in your life? Because when you're having a good day, you know, you love your spouse, you love your children, you love everyone. And then when you're having that bad day, you know, some people will bring up things from their past because they didn't let it go. And, you know, they throw it at their spouses, in their spouse's face, or they, you know, they go after their children with it. How is it that you can really manage that better? What are your thoughts, I should say, on managing that better?
Awareness. You mm-hmm. got to be aware when it happens. You got to start taking some deep breaths probably or do something with your physiology to change your state.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's all about state control, controlling the mental and emotional state that you're in at any given time. That's really the key.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really angry, then there's a certain way you're using your body. There's a certain way you're breathing. There's a certain way you may be standing if you're standing or sitting if you're sitting. If you begin to change your physiology, the way you're sitting, the way you're standing, the way you're breathing, what you're saying to yourself or the images you make inside your head, you'll be sending totally different signals to your nervous system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you will begin to respond from a more resourceful state. But you first
nice.
Of all, the trick is catching yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or once you get there, be able to pull back and say, you know what? I'm not going here with you. I'm not giving my power away.
Right.
Sometimes, by the time you get there, sometimes it's too late. You're already in.
Yes. Yes, and that's when somebody's going to get hurt. That's a serious mental
right.
exercise.
So you start
doing
some jumping jacks, some push-ups, start breathing, start doing some yoga exercises. It'll change your state immediately.
Nice.
I'm serious. You have to start doing something totally different than what you normally do in that state to send different signals to your nervous system.
Right, so Jeff, in the middle of an argument, just start doing some jumping jacks?
I was about to say, I can imagine how crazy you're going to look if you do. I can't wait to do that at work one day and somebody gets on my nerve and all of a sudden I'm going to start doing jumping jacks.
You know what I do? I do this workshop. I do speaking engagements and workshops, but it's one of them. I forgot which workshop it is now. I have people try to get depressed. People tell me they can get depressed very easily. I say, try to get depressed. Then they get depressed. I said, okay, now sit up straight again. Usually they're sitting down. Some people are standing up, but most people are sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, try to get depressed again. This time, you put your hands over your head, lean your head back, put a big smile on your face, and try to get depressed. And, of course, nobody can get depressed. They're all laughing. That's so next time you're at work and someone tries to depress you, put your hands over your head, put your head back, put a smiley face, and walk around the office looking like that. A Jimmy Carter Bellevue to put you into a straitjacket, but you don't. At least you won't be depressed. You have to take control of you. If you don't control your state, other people will.
Nice.
If they control your state, they're controlling your life.
Okay. And then if you're, that's really when you do something like that, you're sending a cue to the other people. And after a while, they kind of know that you do that kind of stuff. So at a particular point, when you do the particular thing, they're going to walk away and leave you alone. So you have over time succeeded in deactivating them. Because they recognize at a certain point they can't get you angry anymore.
Oh, that's no fun for them. See,
right.
Once they can't control you or get you angry anymore, it's not any fun for them.
Right.
As long as they got the control by pushing that button on, you're going to respond a certain way. They're in control. They enjoy it. But once that's gone, I'll tell you what you do. I promise you this will happen. If you deal with anyone who gets on your nerve all the time, and one time they do what they normally do to get on your nerve, you don't respond, watch their face. Because their brain does not have a response programmed in for what to do when you don't respond. Their brain is used to seeing you respond a certain way. So when that doesn't happen, their brain don't know what to do. They're like, what's going on here? They're supposed to be getting mad now. They're not getting mad. And it just doesn't know where to go because there's no program. Remember, the brain is like a, it's the way I describe it, the brain. There's a keyboard, right, on a computer. Well, nowadays, still a keyboard. It's just, they're attached more than detached nowadays, at least in the laptops. Okay, so there's a keyboard. The keyboard to me represents the outside world. That's someone trying to press your button, trying to get you upset. Then you got the hard drive. The hard drive is all your past conditioning. So when they type that information to the computer, your brain searches through the hard drive and says, how am I supposed to respond based on things similar to this that happened in the past? I don't care if you were 2 years old, 3 years old, 5 years old. Your brain goes back to say, how am I supposed to respond to this based on something that happened in the past? And then it says, this happened when I was 9 years old, something like this. It pulls up that behavior on what I consider the screen, which is the monitor, and then when it puts out that you kick it, that's you actually doing the behavior. That's the metaphor I use for how it works. Somebody does something outside where you say, how am I supposed to respond? Then you get a picture that came to your mind from when you were 4 years old and how you responded then you kick out a behavior automatically. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do, and that's what neurolinguistic programming does, helps you go back in there and take out the viruses in the software or put a new piece of software in. The other software is outdated now. It's been there since you were 9 years old, 10 years old, and it served its purpose then. Because back then, whatever happened was a frozen moment in time where your breathing changed, your feelings changed, everything was locked in to whatever that experience was. And it was frozen there, and your unconscious mind said, I'm going to protect you. This will never happen again. So all this time, a lot of our behaviors are just there to protect us from being hurt again. It's never been updated from when we were a child. So what I help you do is go in and update the computer so that they know it's okay now to let this go, let this pattern go. You're older now. You have more experiences now. You have a lot more, things you've done and accomplished now. So you don't need to hold on to this anymore. This does not need to protect you anymore. So when you start to release that stuff, more light comes into your body, and you become a more enlightened being. That's what enlightenment means, that there's more light in your body than darkness because you let go of that stuff in your past.
Wow. Now, I just want to remind our listeners, whether you know it or not, we are already 45 minutes into this conversation. Did that go fast, guys? That's what I was, didn't I tell you? We are 45 minutes into this conversation, and if you're listening, if you have a question or a comment for either one of the guests today, please do call in at 347-996-3160. Press 1 so that we know that you have a question or a comment, or if you just want to continue listening in, please do so. Clearly, I think we are going to go over a little bit. We always do. I don't even know why I'm pretending that we're not going to. But to our listeners, again, if you're listening by computer, you will not be able to hear the rest of the conversation. So in another 15 minutes, if you want to continue listening in, please do call the number and just listen. We are discussing reconditioning your life for success. We've touched on a number of subjects, from removing energy blockages to unconscious filters, communication, deactivating triggers, and so much more. And if you're interested in meeting our guests, there is an event that's coming up in August from the Leithy Florence Foundation, August 24th. Is that correct, Audrey?
Yes, it is.
August 24th. Saturday, August 24th, at the Cornerstone Baptist Church.
Right.
And I believe, let me know if I'm wrong, but there is going to be some sort of giveaway when you come to the event. Is this correct, Audrey?
Yes, I'm working with my speakers who have books and items from their organizations that they would like to, gift our attendees. So, yes, we're working on those types of things to have that available for our participants on the 24th.
Wonderful.
I was hoping I would be able to invite the Bridal Tribe family to a workshop that I'm doing Sunday, but unfortunately for those people who may want to sign up, it's sold out already. And that workshop is Releasing the Past and Embracing the Future, in which we'll be going back and releasing a lot of these negative, I don't care what it is, from anger to shame to guilt, mm-hmm. I don't care if you're an incest survivor, whatever it is. I invited people to bring it with them. Just bring the emotion. You have to tell anybody your business at all. You have to mention one iota of your personal experience. Just bring the emotion, and by the time the workshop is over, it will be gone. Like I said, it's sold out already. So I was thinking, when we spoke originally, actually, Cynthia, I told you about it and said maybe we should invite people, but it's sold out already. So
well, next time we would definitely be interested in attending something, attending a workshop like that. And now that you brought that up, I have the question, and I want you to explain the importance of going to workshops like this. Like you said, you know, people carry around a lot of baggage, and they are unaware that even when they believe they have gotten rid of the first set of baggage, another set can always build up. So even at 10 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, and so on, how often would you say a person should either visit a life coach or attend a seminar where they understand the importance of releasing this type of baggage and changing the energy in their body? How often would you say, what's your opinion on that?
It really depends a lot on the person and what their outcome is. There is no number of times. I have people who've engaged me as a life coach on and on for the last 10 years. They come in, they leave, they come in, they leave. There's people who are consistent. So it just depends. It depends on the person. But the one thing that we have to do is that a lot of people are afraid, especially people of color, are afraid or think there's a negative connotation with going to therapy or getting help.
Mm-hmm.
We feel it's a sign of weakness, especially brothers. We feel it's a sign of weakness. You know, sisters will talk and have their sister groups, and sister groups are okay. I think that they need to stop talking and do some work, the ones I've been to. But what I mean by that,
you're getting trouble, Jeff. You need to cut it out.
Groups. No, I've been to a lot of sister groups, and they talk about the same problems over and over. I went to one, and I went there. I mean, I went there maybe in January. Went November. They talk about the same problems.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time for that. Let's get rid of the problem and create something different instead of talking about the same problems over and over and over again. Some people just want to be heard, and then they should go to therapy or call up a friend and be heard. I'm about transformation now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that people need to start investing in themselves, because when they invest in themselves, they're not just investing in themselves. They're investing in their children's future, their grandchildren's future, and everything else, because the better you are for yourself, the better you're going to be for them. So in general, I believe that people should go out and invest in any type of personal development workshop that they feel comfortable with or feel comfortable with the instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And go out there and start to heal and stuff, because you can peel back, you know, five layers. And I'll put it this way. I did Releasing the Past and Embracing the Future two years ago. Some of the people are coming back again because they got a lot of stuff out, but then when they got that out, there was still some other stuff underneath that. So until you find the core, if you find what's called, what I call, the significant emotional experience, that first time that emotion was triggered in your life, and you let that one go, you probably let go all the rest associated to it, because 15 years of it all those 15 years can be gone in like half an hour.
Wow.
In half an hour.
But you have to find that first.
If you don't find that first one, then you got to go back another layer. So I told the people who are repeating, at least in the past, that you got to go deeper this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no sympathy.
Oh, yes, you did say that. You said one of your mottos is, I won't give up on you. How did you say it? How does it go?
I said, I will not give up on you as long as you don't give up on yourself.
Right. Now, the reason why I ask the question is because I keep thinking of all the different life events that happen from going to college, completing college, getting married, having children, and so on and so on. And sometimes these different life events tend to take on new baggage. So
they do.
That's the reason why I asked you, how often would you say a person should, at least come and see a life coach or so on. I never believe it's personal, but I never believe that a person should be in therapy their entire life every single day for years. I think that you should go in and get to the heart of a problem within a certain amount of time. And if it takes 3 or 4 years for you to really work out certain issues, then I'm not sure what to think.
Well, I can speak for my coaching. Mm-hmm. My coaching is the first period is 10 weeks, and I only do it in 10-week periods. I don't have to sign contracts for 6 months or for 9 months or for a year, for 18 months like some other coaches do. I do a 10-week period because I want to be able to fire you if I don't like you. You should be able to fire me if we're not getting along. And I have fired clients before. I have fired them before. I really have.
Right, I believe you.
Well, I don't want to deal with them anymore. But I want people who are serious and committed to changing their lives. I will give you and do everything I can for you in my power. I overpromise and overdeliver. Some people say underpromise, overdeliver. No, I overpromise and overdeliver. Mm-hmm. There's no one's ever worked with me who will tell you that I have not given them everything I have every time I see them. I got an appointment for an hour that'll last 2 hours, and I won't even charge them another dime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm committed to them and committed to this work. So I think that people should find. I think everybody should have a coach. Number one, because if you look at the greatest people in the world, the most highly paid athletes in the world, the most highly paid entertainers, business people, they all have a coach or a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that everyone should have a coach for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is just if they can just make you accountable, where they calling you and checking on you to make sure you did what you said you were going to do. That's one major reason why there's so many coaches. Most coaches out there are accountability partners. The difference between, pardon me?
I was in agreement. I'm saying, yes, accountability partners are
very important.
Yes, most
coaches are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now, what I do different, what I train people to do differently is not only be accountability partner, but have the tools to help the person transform. So now, not only am I making you accountable, but if you need the extra help, you need the extra tool, you need the extra deprogramming or reconditioning or help you break through that block, I also have that set of tools. That's what makes me different as a coach than the average coach out there. They'll tell you to set goals, and then you make a plan, and then they'll quite make sure you stick to your plan. But what if you have a belief that doesn't allow you to stick to that plan? You have to learn it. What you believe is reflected in the type of life you live. So if you can change somebody's belief, you can change their whole life in a very short period of time. And in this workshop on this Sunday, actually, I'm going to be teaching people how to change their beliefs. So not only will I take them through the process in the workshop, but they'll know how to do it themselves when they go home, in case another belief pops up. I'm about the application. I'm not about theory. I'm not impressed with theory, although I have to give some theory. I'm more impressed with application. Does it work? I gave Audrey a letter to write.
Mm-hmm.
I mailed a letter. Remember Audrey?
Yes. Changed my life. Truly, 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 truly.
Well, let's talk about that. Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
The exercise really was if to write a letter to someone who has hurt you or someone with whom you're angry, right? And I start, so when Jeff told me about the activity, all right, I had it in my head who I knew I was going to write to.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I was reading the information, I wrote the letter to myself. And I really, and, you know, it's step by step what you have to tell yourself in this line, what you tell the person in the next line, the next line, the next line, the next line. And it really made me talk to me about the things I'm doing, the things I've done, the way I feel about the results I've gotten from the way I've behaved and the decisions I've made. And it was not intentional because, you know, I knew who I was going to curse out. I was real clear. I was about to go to town. I wrote to myself, and it really changed my life because, and it wasn't like I put something on the paper and a particular word spoke to me. The whole process, I think, moved a layer to reveal another place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. And I actually also had my youngest son do it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, unbelievable.
I would love to hear more about the evaluations, and I hope that you're going to be asking the participants in this event in August to keep track of the evaluations of when they do these exercises and how it changes their lives. I very much would like to know more about adding word and application together to recondition your life, because that is something else that we touched on when we talked, Jeff. Not just reading the word, but reading the word and using application together to provide healing in a person's life. This is what brings a healer into your family, someone that holds you accountable and actually makes you apply the exercises and certain things to your life. Let's talk about the intentional healing ministry that it's not a ministry, but that's what we named it when we were talking. Let's talk about being intentional about using word and application together to recondition your life.
Well, what we were talking about basically was church. We were talking about church.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I was saying that, you know, a lot of people have a relationship with the Bible. Mm-hmm. But a relationship to the author of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different thing to have a relationship to the Bible and be able to quote the Bible and read it upside down, and every time someone does something wrong, beat them up with the Bible. But the application of the Bible is something different. And that's where most religions fall short, in my opinion. Honestly, I'm not going to say they fall short. It can be better done. In other words, if we take something simple like the scripture, God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of a sound mind and love and the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never saw a preacher, and Audrey, you've been to church a long time. Have you ever saw a preacher tell you how to overcome fear? They don't teach the application. How do you overcome the fear? It's easy to sit there and preach about it and get people excited about it, jumping up and down. But when they leave church, if they got to stay up in the elevator, they still not go up in that elevator. They're going to take the stairs anyway.
Right.
Although they were jumping up and down in church, they're going to walk through the same set of stairs because they have not learned the application of the word.
Right.
Now, first thing people have to understand, if you want to talk about application in a very brief way, is that there's a thin line between fear and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is, what kind of results are you expecting? If you're expecting negative results, you're going to feel fear. If you're expecting positive results, you're going to think of excitement. When I did the fire walk, I don't know how many years ago it was now. We didn't talk about this, Cynthia, but I used to do a fire walk where people walk over a bed of hot coals barefoot.
Mm-hmm.
When people were excited about who they would be on the other side of that, on those hot coals, you think about, if I can do this, if I could defy nature by walking on this bed of hot coals and I'm getting a blister, I can do anything.
Right.
And you look at it from that standpoint, you walk, it's different than you walking over those hot coals because you're not being able to walk over those hot coals because you're expecting to get burnt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's something healthy in that, especially with hot coals, but the point I make is that there's a thin line between fear and excitement. It really depends on what outcome you're expecting.
Mm-hmm.
But I never even heard that said in church. Here's another application I can tell you about. There's one more application I'll give you.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my church one day, and an old woman came, older woman than me, I call them senior saints, came to me. She must have been in her 70s, late 70s, early 80s. And she asked and told me that she was having a problem with faith, that she was losing her faith.
Mm-hmm.
She had been praying for 3 months for something, and it's not coming, and it's just causing her more and more aggravation that her prayer is not being answered, and she's losing her faith.
Mm-hmm.
So me, I said, well, why don't you go talk to one of the older elders? So she said her niece sent her to me. I don't even know who her niece is to this day. I said, why don't you talk to one of the older elders who've been around, and maybe he can help you. But I forgot to say this part. She told me, do not quote scripture and do not pray, and she don't need me to pray for her. I said, all righty now. That's when I sent her to someone else.
Okay.
But she went to the other person, and you can tell that he pulled out his Bible. You see her whole body language change. That's exactly what she didn't want. But I don't think she told him that. She told me that. So I had told her, if she goes over to him, if she's not satisfied, come back to me, and I'll work with her. She came back to me. Now, how do they teach you in church to renew your faith?
Mm-hmm.
Faith comes by reading or hearing the word of God. That's what we tell you, right? So you have to stay in your Bible. This
mm-hmm.
woman didn't want to hear all that. She wanted right then and there how to renew her faith. So I sat her down. I said, okay, ma'am, this is what I'm going to do. Just sit here for a minute. I've got a piece of paper and a pencil. And I told her, draw a line down the middle of the piece of paper. And, of course, she didn't draw it. I ended up drawing it for her. I said, what I want you to do is write down all the times God did not answer your prayer that you can remember. And she wrote down maybe about 7 times. I said, okay. Now I want you to write down all the times God did answer your prayer. I want you to remember each of those times. Just relive those times in your body. By the time she got to 12, she was crying, stood up, hugged me, and left.
Wow.
That's the application.
Wow.
That's the application. So something simple like that is what I mean by the application. Just be able to make stuff live for the people who are reading the Word and following the Word. And as far as the intentional healing ministry is concerned, my point on that is very simple. I wonder what would happen if churches really start following the Messiah, Jesus Christ. And what I mean by that is almost every Christian person you're going to talk to, pastor or pew, is going to tell you they follow Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
If you really follow Jesus Christ in church, to me, if that's a priority to follow Jesus Christ anyway, I think it would be nice to have an intentional healing ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jesus Christ was a healer, first and foremost, a healer and a teacher. If you take all the miracles away from Jesus Christ, what do you have? You'd probably not be seen as the Son of God anymore. It's the miracles that prove that he was the Son of God, all the healings he did, not just the teaching. Take all those miracles away, all that healing away, or you got a great teacher. So if you're going to say that you're following God, I mean Jesus, then you need to have your priorities to be a teaching ministry and a healing ministry, not a choir, not a dance ministry. I'm not saying these things shouldn't be in there. I'm just saying they shouldn't be the priority.
Mm-hmm.
Not a mind ministry. All these other ministries should all come after a teaching and a healing ministry. Our people are suffering. We have people come to the hospital. The church is the hospital. People come in church to be healed.
Mm-hmm.
They come to church looking for some relief from all the stuff the way they've been beat up all week long.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they come to church for. And they get a worship service, a feel-good feeling, they leave, and then by the time they get home, the same stuff is sitting right there and they have not been transformed in most cases.
Right, because it's all emotional. It was just emotional relief based on, you know, everything that was happening and not necessarily practical conversations and practical tips to apply to your life when you leave.
Right. So what I'm saying is that every church that is following Jesus Christ should seriously consider having an intentional healing ministry where they're working on things like for the seniors that have arthritis. Let's relieve some of their pain. Let's help them reduce the amount of pain they're suffering from. What about heart disease? What about diabetes? What about high blood pressure? We got all these things happening in our community, and we do take blood pressure after church sometimes. We do have a van outside to do AIDS testing and cancer testing and screening.
Mm-hmm.
But what about somebody who's going to the hospital for operation? Why not have someone work with them before the operation and then after the operation to accelerate their healing? If they added energy medicine to church, if they added NLP-type things to church, spiritual development-type tools to church, it's not to take away anything that we already have in church. It's to add to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it should be an intentional healing ministry in churches. That's the bottom line.
Okay.
And I will fight for that the rest of my life. I will die. It will be on my tombstone. I will die saying that and fighting for that. I really believe that. That's what God gave me my permission to do. He's like, okay, mm-hmm. Jeff, you've been playing around with this stuff for 30 years now. You've trained with the best people in the world. You're one of the top people around. I've given you all these gifts for you to share in a bigger way. So stop doing this part-time and go out there and do it full-time. And so I left my profession of 12 years, where, as Audrey knows, I did very well in, to start doing this full-time. I give up a lot to start doing this full-time because that is my mission.
Right.
So.
Well, we definitely thank you for your committing yourself to this. I know you did, you know, one of the things that you said when we were speaking was when you're doing what God put you here to do, you should be able to get results. And it's clear that you do get results. And let me thank everyone who decided to call in. The board is just lighting up now.
They've called
because we've actually gone over the hour. So for those who were on the internet, they weren't able to, they're not hearing this portion of the conversation. They are able to just go to blogtalkradio.com/bridaltribe and listen to the archive. But for those who called in before the hour was up, they are now listening to this discussion about having an intentional healing ministry, not just in the church, but in your home as well. You want to be the intentional healer in your home and really make ministry an action thing and not just a word ministry. You want to make it word in action and apply it to your lives in order to do the reconditioning that we are discussing this evening. I'm so happy to have our guests on tonight, and I really pray that you guys get very interested in attending this event. I do believe that Audrey said that she's actually going to be giving away a ticket. Why don't we have people check your page? You do have a page on Facebook, the Lisi Florence Foundation Facebook page.
Yes, ma'am.
With over the next month, and if you're interested in winning this free ticket, just go on over to the page to check and see how that can happen. Please do visit thenobletouch.com where you can find out more about Jeff B. Noble, our guest tonight. Jeff, do you have a Facebook page as well?
My Facebook page is The Noble Touch, but I'm just working on it now. My web page is much better than my Facebook page. And also, for your listeners, you can let them know that I do a free teleconference the first and third Sunday of every month. I do a free teleconference the first and third Sunday of every month. It's composed of me teaching for about a half an hour, then we do a half an hour of healing meditations. That's been going up over 2 years.
How will they be able to participate in that?
If they send an email saying, just send me the address, or say, Cynthia said, hook me up. Cynthia
and
said,
you know
hook me up.
Saying it. Don't even tempt me, because that's exactly what I tell them to say, so don't do it.
you can say that, I'm okay with that. Okay. If they send it to info@thenobletouch.com, info@thenobletouch.com, we'll have someone put them on their mailing list immediately, and they'll start getting all the stuff I send out, especially the free teleconference. There's people in the teleconference from all over the country.
Nice. I can definitely say, guys, Jeff, I do hope to have you back on the show again. I hope this is not the last time we will be talking on the show. You did mention something that has given me certain ideas when you said that, especially the brothers, they really don't like to deal with speaking to someone or going into any kind of conferencing. Or healing. Well, I can't say healing. What is it that I'm trying to say?
Well, as men, we're taught to be strong. We keep our stuff to ourselves, but we can work it out. We can handle it. And that's why sometimes even in the health area, we catch things a little late because we don't go to the doctor until it's like almost an emergency. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think that we have to begin to heal ourselves so we can be better fathers and better husbands and better, you know, workers and just everything we do in our life would be better if we begin to let go out, because men have a lot, we have a lot of pain too.
Yes.
We have more pain than most women think we have.
No, it's
or we
not
just learn to hold it
have
in.
More than we think you have, you just won't admit to it.
Right.
you just won't admit to it, and I'm glad that you said that, because I really do believe that something we, you know, Bridal Tribe has usually in June, we have a special male or men's issue where we address everything from fatherhood to sonship to all kinds of different things. And I do, I'm going to invite you back so that we can actually have a conversation completely focused around the healing of men. Because if they're going to be the priests in the household, I do believe that they need serious healing in order to change the entire household that that they have, that they put together.
I know that when I did premarital mm-hmm. counseling and the women mm-hmm. would come with the men 9 times out of 10, the man didn't want to be there.
Right.
Their attitude right. was, and I've asked them, sometimes, I know you don't want to be here, do you? Nah. So why are you here? You wanted me to come. I said, well, why didn't you want to come? And the attitude was, what are you going to tell me about my woman? That was mm-hmm. their attitude. What are you going to tell me about my woman?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, okay, well. But if my time was over, sometime the men were making the appointments to come back.
Right.
They have
to quickly
go and talk and not be judged and stuff like that.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So, and even the even as a healer, men, I have most of my healers right now, I have 35 people I trained. And probably out of 35, probably about 29 or 28 are women.
Mhm. Mhm. Wonderful. All right. So, again, we are over the hour. I certainly enjoyed you, Jeff. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on. And Audrey, thank you so much for coming on to talk about the event that's coming up. I'm sure that we're going to have you back on in the next couple of weeks with another guest, so that we can let our listeners know what's going to be happening with the Lisi Florence Foundation. Please, my listeners, come out. Support the Lisi Florence Foundation. Please support Jeff Noble, thenobletouch.com. I hope to see you at the event. We will be broadcasting live at the event for those of you who are interested. And I hope to see you there so that you can begin to recondition your lives and change your lives. One of the things that we're taking home tonight that Jeff said was what you believe reflects the type of life that you live. So I do hope that you're all taking this home with you. And we will see you next week. Why don't you guys go ahead and say goodnight.
All right. Okay, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. Jeff, mm-hmm. thank you so much. Look forward to definitely seeing you on the 24th. And, of course, we'll chat in between there.
All right. Once again, thank you, Cynthia, for inviting me on. Audrey, thank you for telling me about Cynthia. Cynthia, thank you for trusting Audrey. And I have to thank your Bridal Tribe family for listening and having me on. And I go out there and let God show you off.
Indeed. Indeed. All right. So, again, to our listeners, you know that you are on Tribal Wisdom. You're listening to Tribal Wisdom by Bridal Tribe. I'm your host, Cynthia Williamson. It's always a pleasure to be with you on Wedding Wednesdays. Remember that we're a company about love, beauty, marriage, and wedding fun. We will see you next week. We love you. Have a great week.